This episode of Mothcast is proudly brought to you by Fullview, sponsors of the 2011 Moth Worlds in Belmont, and Solar Tint Sydney. For all your window tinting needs, go to solartintsydney.com.au.
So it's all over. Borg Larry's the new world champion.
Yeah, well done, Borg. He sailed very, very well, and he's beat Nathan, who's a hell of a sailor.
I think these worlds have really just shown the game has changed. The level has just lifted completely.
It's gone up a notch, hasn't it? You know, it's gone from a high level at probably Aussie Nationals as being the last event, if you discount the Euros, where we saw the quality fleet flood up. And now just watching people do foiling techs and sailing really, really well, high out of the water, very fast. It's quite inspirational. Yeah.
It's completely turning into a high-speed game of chess. You can just look at it's not just speed racing, it's actually tactical. You know, there's lots of good tactical racing happening now. So I think the venue of the Gorge turned out excellent for that, with very shifty tactical racing, sort of get away from the start, hit ley line, tack, comeback style racing, which I think some of the more recent regattas have had. So it was brilliant watching, and congratulations to Bora for what I think is a brilliant monumental win. The event itself was, I think, all up, it was how many days? 7 days of just, and almost something like 30 races in that. So a lot of racing in a very short time.
Yeah, I think 15 races in 5 days, wasn't it? But yeah, a lot of racing, and the format's changing, you know. Years ago, we did, 10 races in a regatta. Now it's going up. So, you know, I wasn't there to say, but it looks like physical fitness is playing a bigger part than ever before.
A couple of minor rule changes that should make things interesting. AGM, the top 10 guys now just pick their own number. Well, they use their number from the last World Championship.
I think it's great. It's making it high profile. You know, you've got all these... it's a bit more like Formula One. You know, you've got people putting their names in the sails, and it's just... It just leads to a more professional look for the class.
Now, I do have to agree with Doug Colane on this one. I think if people are starting to complain about, oh, you've got to put your name on the sails so we know who's who's, come on, if everyone would have a different coloured boat instead of just like, oh, look, it's another clear black boat, another clear boat, another clear boat.
Yeah, well, I've always been an advocate for bright boats.
Well, as it turns out, at St. George, I think, there's probably two boats that have the same colour. Apart from that, it's almost like, you want to sail at George? Here's the colour palette. You can't have these five. You have to choose from the ones that are left.
Yeah, it is a little bit limiting. It's, from a manufacturer's point of view, it makes it a lot easier, I guess, if you can just, you know, paint them all one colour or provide them a finish.
Or don't paint them at all.
Or don't paint them at all, you know, and they look great, so why not? But it is nice to see also different colours, and, you know, it's you can distinguish a little bit easier between who the guys are.
The most important development I see coming out of the Worlds there was the Boom of Doom. Have you heard about this one?
No, not the Boom of Doom.
What they've found is that, are you familiar with a beer bong, right? A beer bong is a contraption it's a university thing. It's a very large funnel and a tube. You can put four or five at uni, up to six schooners of beer. Because the top is open, it allows the fluid just to flow through super quickly. In Europe, they had the Tiller of Doom, which was an old Tiller extension. They've now found that apparently a broken mast and or a Mark II boom is perfect for shotgunning a beer through the length of it.
Great. Do you get the carbon dust as well when you're drinking Detonol?
Well, what was interesting, this is a requirement. This is very important because there was two people that didn't partake in the Boom of Doom at the Worlds, Nathan and Rowan.
Right.
They're the only two that didn't line up for a beer. So start liking your beer, Luca. If you're going to the Worlds, it's going to be there.
There's a lot of wax on those masks on the inside before they come off the main.
Or even the tape that hasn't come out yet. The other thing which comes to mind is there was a lot of development going on at the Worlds. There were lots of tweaks, you know, people trying rudders, people trying new adjusty bits, trying to get that last bit of speed.
Yeah, it's moving. You know, the class has always been evolving, and this is just another thing, I guess.
The other thing... it comes to mind was that the coverage of the Worlds was excellent. There was a lot of almost live video coming out. I know some people will throw stones at me for this, but I actually really liked the fact that I could be at work and have the Twitter feed coming through and seeing who's at what round mark and what round.
So I didn't watch any of the Twitter, but it wasn't really good to see Sailing Anarchy take a big part in it. And, you know, from CSD's point of view, I think the money was well spent, and it was really good to see that it was used for a lot of the media coverage. You know, they got a PR person that did a fantastic job in Michelle, which I sort of corresponded with her a little bit, and it was really good to see all the race reports go out immediately, very soon after the event. And also, you know, with the video crews and the sidelines, it just seems to be getting better and better. It's just getting more professional, and you know, I hope it leads to something bigger and better again.
It's really raising the bar, and it's going to give us a real job to make a really good event at Belmont.
Well, Brian's talking about professional circuit, and if he can get that off the ground, I think that'd be fantastic. You know, you could definitely imagine the class being...
As long as it's not one design.
As long as it's not one design, Dave. No. Well, we don't want to see a manufacturer.
Anyone who brings out a professional circuit that's one design, I think we should crucify them. Anyone who's got a blog should crucify them.
Well, seeing as he's decided to jump in, we should introduce the show's guest. Referred to online as the Moth God, as the fastest guy on the planet, as the guy who does stuff at St. George. Welcome, Dave Lister.
G'day.
So we would chat to Dave all the time. Obviously, he's one of the St. George club mob, if you like. We finally drag him into the Mothcast studio to sit down and have a chat.
He's pretty shy, Dave. He doesn't like to talk.
Yeah, probably. You must be scraping the bottom of the barrel to interview me.
So just to pull some background for people that don't know you, Dave, where did you come from? I think a lot of people, the first time they actually heard anything about you was this little video that popped up about some blue boat doing these little tacking manoeuvres and not touching the water. So how long have you been sailing moths, and what's your history before that?
I had a moth years ago, and I used to leave it down the beach before foiling, and I used to just take it out and just have a hack in the afternoons. But I was too heavy to be competitive, so I never raced it. But so when I got into the class 2 years ago, it was the boat handling was never going to be a problem. So I had a go at Lucas' boat. Once he let me have a go at his red boat, and it was nice and new, and I thought, this just suits me fine.
That doesn't really narrow it down. All his boats are red.
No, I had a black boat. Three carbon one.
Yeah, well, I talked to him and they let me have a go at his brand new prowl, so it was the first prowl. But it was pretty enlightening. It makes a big difference. Anyone who wants to get into the class, if you have a go of a boat, a nice new fast boat, it is a real revelation for anyone. So if you get a chance to let someone have a go of the boat, because they'll more or less definitely get into it.
So can I sell tickets for people to get a ride on yours?
If you want.
A lot of people have had a go on that, haven't they?
Oh, they need
a lot of 16 guys getting into the class.
Yep, and they'll almost get it stuck under the bridge. And
it's great fun, isn't it?
Yeah, we all just had great fun just watching them f*** my boat.
Hey, like, this makes me feel good because at least I'm upright. I'm upright and going nowhere while they're laid over and going nowhere. So what about Pride of Moss? You've done racing...
I did a lot of yachts. I did a couple of years in MGs and a couple of years in 16s, but they were pretty boring.
What sort of dinghies? Like?
Dinghies?
Skiffs, dinghies?
Yeah, MG14s and NSs and 16-foot skiffs and contenders.
And you've known Luca for...
But I didn't really start sailing until I was 25. I started with my father as a kid in an NS-14, but I just sat at the front and couldn't wait to get home to go surfing, so I wasn't really interested in sailing until I got older.
So how long have you and my this man over here have a bit of history?
Oh, yeah, Luca was just a kid at the sailing club, funny-looking kid.
So not much has changed then?
He really grew into a funny-looking adult. But he was a kid that was sailing at MGs at the time, and he was very keen The keenest person I've ever met, to be honest.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
Fair enough. Wow.
So have you guys sailed together, or are you generally racing
each other? We started 16 together. Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah, it's really good, I thought.
Yeah, we had a few arguments. When it was really windy, you take three people to sail 16 and basically two of us would be lifting the boat, and Nick wouldn't lift his corner when it got really windy. We'd have to drag it to the water. But we sailed right together.
Yeah, you sailed some big breezes at the River Club.
Yeah.
And don't race around anything over there.
So what about racing against each other? I'm actually going somewhere with this in case you're not with us out, but what about racing against each other? Has that been happening for a while as well, against various classes, or does only really now in the Moth?
No, we race against each other in the MGs. Yeah.
The rivalry's been going on for years now.
Yeah, because...
10-year anniversary?
Because one thing I find that is an absolute pleasure to watch from very, very far away is these two little boats going, it's a gajillion miles an hour up and down the river. And so you two guys, you seem to be pretty closely matched. Do you work a lot to...
It always helps if you've got someone else to have a close race with. We had St George, we get a very close race between us two, so and it always improves the breed. It just makes you faster and faster. We're friends, but geez, we hate each other.
I think you're fast enough at the moment, David. There's a lot of people that'd be quite happy to stop where you are. So you had to go on Lucas' boat, and at that point it's like a 30,000, like a shot of smack that cost you 20 grand. You know what I mean? You've had to go on things. You know you've got to get one.
Yeah. Well.
Now you're into drugs, Bruce.
I didn't.
What is sailing a Moth if it's not a very expensive drug habit? Seriously, the amount of money that you spend to just go out on these things day after day, and as soon as you hop off, you want to go back again. Come on.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
But the trick is just to spend a little bit of money at a time. Then your wife doesn't know. So you buy a piece of shit boat, but you buy good foils. You just can't go and spend $30,000 on a boat and expect your wife to say that's okay. But there was an old boat that Luca had that he sailed before, his Hungry Tiger, and that was still sitting in the club, which he was letting people use. And that had the wings off my old boat. And I thought, I'll just build a hull to go underneath it and buy John Ollett foils. At first I was going to build my own foils, but everyone who seemed to like their own foils didn't seem to do such a good job, so I thought, I'll just buy John Ollett foils. And the wings were still all right. They were the first wings ever built by CST, and they're still going.
Yeah.
And then John Gilmore said that he had a mould, he was going to build a mould, so... My boat was the first boat out of that mould, and yeah, it went. The boat was pretty much built in probably 2.5-3 weeks. So when Luca came back, we went to Garda. We just put it in.
We did the inside skin, I think.
Inside skin of the skull, and when he came back, it was pretty much decked and finished. So that boat came out real quick. So
and that's just the boat you're still using now.
I'm still using now. I've built a few shells. I've built another two boats myself, and I built another shell for a, what's his name?
Oh, it would have been
Nick.
Nick Belly, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know what he's done with it, but that's where my boat came from. It was built to a budget. Old wings. I had an old mast. That was the first CST carbon mast that he ever built too, which is, the wings on my boat are 10 years old. And
So what I'm trying to really get a picture of here now is, okay, so you've decided you're going to get off, you've trained, you've sold an old clunker, for want of a better term, you've built yourself a new boat. Now, what sort of goes through your mind, I think, is that there's a very significant journey going from that point to being quite fastest guy on the planet. So what's the sort of, and that's in those last few years, what's the sort of approach you've taken to really, learn and understand and develop?
I think as soon as I hopped into the boat, pretty early on, I could tell that there were some things that were going wrong with the boats. And pretty early on, I could see where the boats were going to go. And it was just a matter of
you know, that boat was built pretty, the basic setup of the boat was pretty much a copy of a prowler, you know, the centreboard placement, and because I wanted it to be a very standard boat. But I don't know, I think my weight sort of plays into it. I'm a fairly agile, big guy, and I'm a pretty aggressive sailor, so you can, I mean, the boat weighs, I don't know, 30 kilos or something, so I'm 90 kilos, and I'm the boss. I mean, you can really push the boat around like nothing else, and, you know, you can, they're great boats for that sort of thing. You can physically get the boats to go fast.
So I think you're privileged in that your work, working for yourself, allows you being able to sail midweek, where a lot of computer office working geeks like.
I usually sail about three times a week in summer, really, once a week in the winter. But.
So you think putting that sort of amount of time on is important to?
It's important, but I don't think it helps your boat handling, but it helps your tuning a lot better, because you can be very sensitive to differences in the boat. You can be, and that's what it comes down to most of the time, is understanding what the boat's telling you all the time.
So how much time do you spend off the water and tuning in that sort of building bits?
Not very long. I'm not in the garage that much at all, really. Like, usually if I've got an idea of what's going to make the boat faster, it usually doesn't go onto the boat for ages. I usually think about it for maybe 6 months before I actually put it on, unless I really need the speed. If I feel like I'm getting, you know, everyone's getting faster and faster, and if I feel like I'm falling behind a little bit, I'll you know, ramp that up to put that onto the boat quicker. But, you know, you don't. There's no need to rush things in.
So I remember talking to Lockie Byrne down at the Nationals, and he sort of asked me, why does no development happen in Melbourne? And I sort of thought about it at the time, and I sort of, if you think to our club, I think, I don't know if we've covered this before on Mothcast or not, but you've built your own boat. I built my own boat. Luke has tweaked his own boat. The Stevensons have built or tweaked their own boats or their own foils. I think it's almost part of the DNA of the club that you have to be either building or tinkering.
I don't think it's just the club. I think it's just Sydney is the way. I mean, people building 16s, most of them built their own boats. You know, my father used to build his own boats in the 16s. I think it's just, it is a Sydney thing. And I don't know. I think if you ever to win a race in your own boat and with features of your own design.
So coming back to what's quicker, do you obviously believe that a home-built boat will be quicker than a board boat? You have that belief?
Depends on the boat, depends on who built it, depends on what they did to it, but I don't know. I think, I don't know.
You can't
say a home-built boat's going to be quicker than
Think of it a different way. A lot of the developments that find their way onto production boats start out with someone tinkering their shed.
Yeah.
So, for example, the way the rudder mechanisms work on 99% of the fleet was built by a home builder. The
Andrew Stevenson.
Exactly. The John Islett, the whole foil arrangement and the wand arrangements come out from a guy tinkering in Perth, John Islett. So, if you like, do you think that without the home tinkerers leading this R&D...
Well, tinkerers have got nothing to lose. So you can make a complete goose of yourself and no one really cares. But if you're rowing with his blade rider and he comes out with something stupid, everyone just would love to cut down the builder. I don't know why, but...
Tall puppy syndrome.
Yeah, a little bit, but... Yeah, I've got nothing to lose, whatever I do. I mean, only you guys see my bad days. I've got a lot of bad days too. But it is. I feel sorry for a builder because you got it on the line every time you go out. So everyone's got a stupid blog, and they're just going to write about how badly this broke or something like that. So yeah, it's a pretty tough.
So
tough crowd.
We'll come back to that in a minute. But I suppose ultimately where I want to with this question is. do you ultimately think that you are going to have to do some level of tweaking on a boat to win in combination with training and that sort of stuff? Or do you think you will be able to buy a boat, train 8 days a week, because apparently that's what's required now, and still win in the long term?
No, this is a three-dimensional sport. It's not, I mean, Nathan is a, you know, an excellent sailor, a world-class sailor, and he's got fantastic boat handling, but you need the development and the tuning skills as well. So, I might be a good tuner and a good boat handler, but I might not be the best. So we end up being about the same, but the fact is, yeah, you need to beat all three to win.
So it's a bit like Formula One, you know. You can be the best driver.
Yeah, but there's three people. You know, you've got to do it by yourself unless you've got two of them. You know, it's
a combination of a fast...
No, it's not three people. It's obviously one person. But to the boat handling and the skill. But, yeah, no, it's definitely...
combination of a fast boat and that's been developed in a good sailor and that's the win.
Yeah, it's... That, which makes it interesting. It's good, you know. It's good that it takes a while to get the speed out of the boat.
So with your developments, what have you done? I mean, you've got lots of different bits in your boat that everybody would love to know about. So now,
well, I've got a skimming mast, which are...
Yeah.
But
what about more specifically? What about the really go-fast bits that... Everybody wants to know about. Yeah. What's different?
Let's just start on skinny mast. So you guys really led this whole skinny mast revolution.
Well, I asked for it, and then Clive reluctantly made me skinny mast. But, yeah, what else?
It's taken off. It's been good. But, yeah, I mean...
was it dial, one stoppers, small rudders? I suppose that was all came from St. George.
Hang on, so... This...
And, Andrew Stevenson came up with the raking rudder.
So when you talk about the dial...
a lot of the things from the class have come from St. George.
So when you talk about the dial, you're talking about...
adjustable ride height.
Which is what, if you want to see a picture of it, if you get along to...
Well, you just have to look at any boat in the world.
Yeah, all the boats in the world had it. I think it was quite funny that you've been running that for, what, a season?
I built that with the boat, but I never used it.
Yeah, so you had that idea. For almost, that's a perfect example.
It was built from day one. But
so you used it at the Nationals, though. So it worked pretty well there. I mean, it's interesting that nobody really caught on to it until quite later on. You know, we got back from the Nationals, and
well, Boris said that he was going to build it as soon as he got home, so it was nice. But
which he did, and then... turns up at the US Nationals and last, like, literally a week and a half ago, and everyone goes, oh my God, we have to copy it.
Well, you all saw it too, and you never didn't do it either, so.
No.
we all have now.
But,
So that's the dial. One stopper, another little tweaks like that. Yeah. You mentioned the R word, the rudder.
Small rudder. The small rudder.
Oh, yeah, got a small rudder.
Mm. And so I think that
everyone's got a small rudder over there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think I know people definitely trying them.
Oh, Rowan! I saw some pictures of Rowan's wild and wonderful rudder.
It is interesting that your rudder seemed to work first go. You know, there wasn't an awful amount of development, unlike with the other guys, where it worked.
Sometimes you, as I said, you think about it for a good 6 months before you actually put it on. But I had the rudder before Sirs, and I knew it was fast, so I didn't think there was any need to put it on for Sirs and sort of show everyone just before I go to the Nationals. But yeah, sometimes if you think about it from enough angles, you just know something's going to work. And I've been lucky with some of the things that luckily they work.
So I remember when you were actually developing the rudder, you basically had both rudders on the deck at St. George. You'd sail with one, come back in, swap it over, you know, try the other one, come back in, swap it again.
Yeah, as I said, the more you sail, the more you feel the differences. And, you know, if you can sail with the two different rudders very, you know, close by, it becomes apparent. But, it's what you've got to do. You've just got to keep changing your gear and feeling the differences. But
and I think another thing that came along with the new rudder is you decided to get rid of the twist adjuster. And go for what's now known as, I think, the Lister lever.
There you go. I don't know whether that's the, you know, that's just another way of doing something very, like, basically does the same as everything else, but it was easier for me to build in it. I think it worked better.
So for the guys that don't know what it is, it's a...
I rake the whole gantry.
Right. So you...
Instead of just the rudder.
So your tiller extension doesn't twist? You don't adjust anything for twisting the tiller extension?
No, it does a couple of things. It drops the rudder down a little bit lower. It stops getting lee helm into your rudder from raking your rudder off the back of your pin, which I notice when I've used everyone else's boat, they seem to feel bad. And it's... It's very regular. It's very easy to control the amount very accurately. And if you're doing tuning, it's important to be able to have very accurate settings.
Is it also easy for a small child to come along and change the setup while you're on the beach when you're off?
yeah, it is. So you've got to keep adjusting. You've got to keep measuring things to make sure that people don't ruin it.
Because one thing, when I look at your boat, I sort of think... You could get yourself in a lot of trouble. So by that I mean is, I reckon I could have you set your boat up, fully tweaked, I could hop on, and by the top mark, I could have it completely detuned. How do you...
There's no way anyone who hops on my boat, it's just a beast. It's not an easy boat to sail. It will basically fly out on you.
So I guess with now, I just... With nothing set, you don't really have a setup. Your setup is floating. Yeah, you will play it as you
say. I have a floating setup, which means every day it's going to be different. Every day I have certain parameters that I sail to, which I go out before the start, and I'll set the boat for the day, and then I'll work off that parameter, to go safer or a little bit unsafe.
So there is an element of a lot of the guys. Might be copying the dials and things like that, learn how to use it.
The more adjustments you have on the boat can make you faster, but the more adjustments means you, as I said, three-dimensional support now, that you can actually have a bad day in your tuning. So while I'm out there, I'm doing all the tuning. You can have an off day where I sail quite well, but my tuning was shit, so I'm not that quick on that day. So, and sometimes you're trying different things, but, yeah, it's...
So I suppose, do you think it's becoming more and more like motorsport in respect that you've now, you know, you might want to optimise, you know, how you go around a corner, for example, so you're tweaking the shocks and springs, so it's almost become the exact same with the Moths now.
Yeah. It is very similar, I would think. You know, it's getting very complex to be fast, but it's not hard and it's fun. You know, It's just add something to it.
So I suppose your biggest claim to fame is first guy to do the foiling tack.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure other people did it.
Oh, without touching it.
No, I don't think. I think it's recorded on video.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Bora beforehand did it.
That's pretty hypocritical of me, hassling Bora, telling it, and then me putting it on. But yeah, such is life.
So is there? Can anyone do it? Is there some just magic little secret setup that you can tell me?
I reckon they'll all be doing it pretty soon. Everyone will be doing foiling tacks everywhere. Yeah.
So,
like anything, the first one to do it, then everyone says, "Oh, that can be done," and then everyone will be able to do it.
So if we've got all foiling jibes and we're now starting to get consistent foiling tacks, is there going to come a time where you will pop up at the start and you'll sail the entire race without touching if you do it right?
I reckon Christmas.
Christmas. Because remember you were talking about a story, because you sail a lot offshore with your Moth, don't you? Like you do a lot.
I go off Cranwell sometimes. Yeah, I sail offshore.
That just confirms my mind. You're completely crazy. I've always thought it, but...
I do yacht races sometimes.
So you talked about attacked Bora. Now that happened on.
I wasn't attacking Bora.
No.
It was just. He said that.
The foiling tax ladies.
Yeah, foiling tax ladies.
I
was just having a bit of a fun. But that's just, you know, everyone should take everything said on the internet as fun. Anyone ever really says anything that's meant to be. Too rude or anything like that.
So where I was heading with that question was, Bloss, you're quite notable for being silent online compared to the rest of the
I have a theory that If you blog, you will lose. If you look at anyone who has won anything and done well in Mothim, they don't have a blog.
What about Rowan?
What about Bora?
Rowan sort of got away a bit early. He got in and got out, and then he obviously wanted to blog a lot, so he had to get out.
Well, technically he doesn't have a blog because he doesn't have comics.
But if you look at I think Simon is probably as far as I'm concerned, he won the Moth Worlds. For blogging worlds, because he came third and he still blogged. But Matt Belcher doesn't blog. He did good. He won the national.
AMAC
doesn't blog. He did good.
John Harris
doesn't have a blog.
Yeah. Seen that AMAC hired Simon to do his
website. Who else? I don't blog. You blog. You blog too. Who else? I mean, you really look at it. If you blog, you lose. So I really love a blog, but I just don't want to.
You just don't want to jeopardise your chances.
Yeah, basically.
Wow.
It's very simple, isn't it?
It is. It's good. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. Actually, Bora used to blog, but he doesn't blog now.
So you can't have a blog as long as you don't post. Is that what you mean? Because I haven't posted in about 2 months. So I wonder if I now have a better chance.
Well, you're probably getting a bit quicker.
Right. So the less you post, the quicker you get.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
It's a good theory. It stands. It's
okay. You know, so
Scott blogs a lot. Elvis used to say, little less talk, little more action.
So what happens if you have a podcast?
Podcast.
Then it's all over.
How'd you go? This is just very scary. I also have a theory, if you're Twitter, you'd probably die.
Okay. But that explains everything. I'll just give up now. Yeah. Get a motorbike.
Speaking of boat development, Dave, where do you think the class is going to go, and what's the next thing for you? You've done a lot of things that people aren't aware of. You know, there's Devo, which was prior to getting into the Moth class, and there's been some wacky ideas like that.
Devo?
Anymore? Yeah, you don't know about the Devo. It was a world speed record kernel. It didn't work too well, did it?
Yeah. No, I thought the Devos were the boats that he's building.
No.
Now
there is a Devo, which is a high speed project. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, thanks. No, we don't want to talk about it.
No. I did say that. It actually almost.
You had to go up Devo 2. There was a Devo 1, which was the windsurfer one.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
what is it? Devo 2.
Oh, Devo 2.
The hammerhead one. Hammerhead one. Yeah, that one went a bit better, but
yeah.
Still. Do you want to explain?
No. It was a bit too wacky, and just as I said, you wouldn't want to do that if you were Blade Runner. You know, you just get crucified. So it's the beauty of being a home builder. You can do wacky things, and no one really cares.
So Bora came ashore after winning the world champion, and Colleen asked him.
Well, dude, it must be amazing knowing that as long as you're within, you know, 50 boat lengths of anyone, when you turn the corner, you can catch them.
It's a pretty reassuring feeling.
So where does that downwind speed come from? It's just time?
Is it gear? No, I would actually.
Is it what?
I think.
Now you can tell your secrets. You won the worlds. What's the secret?
It's gear, it's technique, but, like, above all, like, Dave Lister and the guys from St. George's had a lot to do with telling me how to make the boat go fast downwind. And as much as this is my world championship, this is Dave's, and he is an incredibly special individual to call me up out of the blue and tell me that he wants to help me win the worlds. And that was just, like, such an emotional charge, I guess.
You obviously talked to Bora a fair bit throughout the event. Was it
I didn't talk to him that much. I texted him a few times and that sort of thing, but I think he was doing pretty good without me.
So he must be pretty proud that you've had a bit of a helping hand in the whole thing.
Oh, I think it was minimum effort. minimum effort on my part. He's done all the work, but it was very impressive. I just couldn't. It looked like a really good racing. It looked really close, and even Nathan. There's a video of one of the races where Nathan just slams a Lee Bowie on the mark, and that just shows how the class has evolved and been very professional. He's a great sailor, and it's just a good little expose of the class.
So what was it that made him so fast? What's the secret, though?
Well, that's quite simple. You just...
Jeez. That's pretty good, eh?
Yeah, it only takes 2 minutes.
I thought it was hard.
Yeah. Okay, so notes to speak. We've got to do the Demon Tweak, and I'm not going to repeat it. You can replay it if you want to hear it again.
Yeah,
that's right. So you've got to do the Demon Tweak, sail lots, build your own boat, and not have a blob. That's the secret to
basically
becoming a god.
Well, I don't know god.
You really should sail in Balmoral because they're 100% bog free.
Are they really?
Yeah.
They weren't.
Because
Simon Nelson was sailing there and he had them.
No, but he's left.
I have to say that although blogs are obviously making me slow, I think I'm addicted to reading them. Everyone's got them. And you have to admit, it is pretty interesting to see what everyone says. So
how did both of you find, because for me, like, I've never come anywhere, but how did you both find the world titles where you didn't go and watching it?
It's all positive. It's the worst thing.
Yeah, it's not real good, but I don't know. You can't do everything. I've got 2 little kids and I don't think it wasn't the right time for me, for my business, for my wife, for my kids, and you can't do everything. And sailing is a sport and it's a lot of fun, but it just wasn't up really high on my priority list at the moment.
So look out, Belmont.
Yeah, Belmont's probably my only chance of doing it wrong, going to the world. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so it would have helped if it was raining like it's Weymouth, I guess.
Oh no,
I reckon
Weymouth would have been even better for me. You know, just
with the weight and
big
breeze.
Wind.
Yeah,
yeah. I think and Weymouth, yeah, probably would have been even easier. But it would have been a good one too. But obviously, only 2 days of racing, it's hardly worth spending whatever it costs to go over there.
But
yeah, there's always another day. I mean, I'm almost 40 now, so I suppose I don't. Amex doing it, and he's 50 something, and you can still do it.
Yeah, so another 15 years, though.
Yeah, another 15 years.
At the World Championships, we noticed that felt that there's no more development to come through the, or not much development to come off the foils, and he's going to focus on rig development. How do you feel about it? Do you think this, we're kind of getting towards the end of it all?
No way. I think it's got miles to go. And I wouldn't discount anything in the boat. Everything needs to be looked at always. And just keep working. But he has a commercial point of view. Rig development is there's no tooling involved. So it's very easy to design and build a boat. You don't want to be changing your foils every year and the boat's only just come out.
Yeah.
So, that's probably the next step for them. But
do you feel that with all the changes that, that could possibly happen, the clubs maybe should have some sort of restriction on maybe not on what you can do, but perhaps number of foils used or restricting the number of pieces of equipment that are available?
I don't know, there's two points of view. One point of view, for the majority of the class, it's probably not a good thing to have multiple foils and multiple rigs and multiple sails and... But from another point of view, I'd like to see the class get even more professional and faster and, so in that point of view, I really like the fact that, and it helps development. If you're allowed to have more foils, means you're allowed to push the envelope a little bit harder. But I can understand whichever way the majority of the class want to go, well, it's fine. It doesn't really bother me either way, but I can see a point either way.
So from a cost point of view, because I think if you look at, I think from a Scott took 3 masts, Scott always takes a lot of gear, but he did break two of them. So he took, so Scott took three masts, and then Bora had don't know how many masts. There's always a danger that someone's going to start building foils for conditions and then really, really pushing the cost up.
Well, at the moment I have a foil that's more orientated for upwind and another foil more orientated for downwind and chop. So I'm already doing it.
So yeah, you're going to have a like a little floating buoy?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. If you know the conditions are going to be a certain, this is going to be a certain sort of regatta, I'll use that foil. If it's going to be, you know, if it's going to be a strong, choppy regatta, I'll use this, you know, a foil that's more orientated for safety, and another one more orientated for danger, you know, and fast. It's just different. It's, so, you, yeah, it's already there.
So, when you sort of sail a boat like unlike most other people, and by that I mean is that. I just contrast the styles between you two. Luke, you seem quite smooth and stable. You look like you're racing a bucking bronco around the course.
Yeah, it's Luke practices and he never swims. I practice. I have 20 swims every time, and it's just the way I do it. Is I practice. Really on the edge all the time, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to swim in a race. It's just the way you do it. But
trying to find the limit.
Yeah, it's not real good in winter. I still seem to have 20 swims the other day, but it's just different ways that we do it.
You're quite aggressive with the boat too when you sail. You just said before you had to sort of let the boat know who the boss is.
Yeah,
so you throw it around like you're quite physical.
You can physically a lot of times now, even downwind at full speed, I can physically get the boat back down into the water again. Even if it flies out without crashing, you can catch it a lot. If you get used to the feeling of the boat just about to go, and you can catch it a little bit before if you're so close to the edge a lot, and.
So I think the bottom line there is get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, definitely. If you go around and if you come in and you go, I never felt like I was really in any danger downwind that time, you're probably going to get passed by me. You're going to get passed by the guy that is on the edge. You know, it's just the way the boats will go.
And I suppose having an advantage downwind, as Bora just showed in the world, is just a huge advantage.
Yeah, well, he's obviously done a lot of work too. I mean, you know, whatever I sort of helped him with, like, he's obviously carried it on and done a lot of practice too. He looked really good at the world. He looked really, really in control.
Do you keep a few secrets to yourself?
I've got long sleeves and I've got a lot up there.
So there's some... So from a development point of view, you think it's always important to have a couple of ideas and always have, you know, things going?
I think you've always got to leave more in the tank.
So you've got your next boat design in your head already, I think?
Oh, yeah. it's there. The boats will look a little bit different in the future. Once the boats don't touch the water at all, so they will look a little bit different.
Like Mirabud, the pipe boat.
Yeah. No, it wouldn't go that far. I mean, that's
just ugly. I'm sorry, but that's just...
Yeah, that's ugly. But, you know, who knows? The boats will change. You know, if I don't do it, someone else will do it. Someone will design something that's a little bit... Not so evolutionary, more revolutionary. It's... all the boats at the moment look pretty similar. It's just styling, I suppose.
So I think there was a phrase that was used to describe Steve Schimmel and the Scouse back in Adelaide. He said essentially that even though Steve Schimmel may not have murdered the Scouse, he was definitely sitting on the lid of the coffin. So do you think that Bora, with his absolute, you know, showing of speed at the Worlds, has really, for want of a better term, made winning in the class impossible for the weekend sort of sailor that doesn't go out midweek and isn't at next Olympic level. Because, like, training... If now to win a world title takes training 6 days a week...
Technically, Nathan should have won. Technically, Nathan's a world-class international Olympian. And he seems to be the right man in the right place all the time. And Bora was a well-trained amateur. He trained a lot, and but that was just Bora is a normal guy. You know, he hasn't done Olympic campaign, well, not that I know of anyway. But
yeah, she has
49.
But he you obviously don't listen to our show, Dave. No, he was never at a high level funded the level like Nathan enjoys. It's more like...
Yeah, I guess that's a big difference in, not having gone to the Olympics and...
Yeah, it just shows that, you can't... Anyone can still win, and you don't have to buy an expensive boat. You can win with a, a well-sorted home-built boat with 10-year-old wings. I'm not saying that I could win it, but, I'm a good sailor, but I'm not elite or anything like that. I just go fast.
Yes. Money first.
Sort of like the Harlem Globetrotters, just lots of tricks and speed and stuff, but not actually that great.
Yeah, because I know Bora is definitely looking forward to a match up with you later on this year when he comes out.
Yeah, he got a text message saying he's got another race. So that'll be fun.
So he's coming down to Sydney, I take it, to do a bit of sailing here?
Yeah, I think I'm not still going to speak for him, but I think he's planning on doing SIRS and probably the Aussie Nationals. He's done the last couple of years, so I don't see why this year would be any different.
Well,
have to get citizenship soon.
So that's the next step, Dave, I take it, is Aussie Nationals?
Yeah, that's the only other regatta that I've got coming up.
And it looks pretty good for the heavier guys and... Plenty of breeze forecast and fairly flat water.
Yeah, there's always going to be some light races that have been completely f***ing, but there's nothing I can do about that. I think the boats will go. I think the weight won't be such an issue as the boats get faster. There's always going to be an issue of getting up, but once you're up, I think you get that apparent forward. Heavy will be quick, and it'll just get quicker and quicker. So I never try and sort of lose weight and try and, but I never really feel like it's really hindering me once I'm foiling. It always feels good. But I've never been lighter. So, but I wouldn't, if I was a big guy and I was thinking about getting in the class and thinking it might be a bit harder, I certainly wouldn't. I think you'll find that you've got an advantage more times than you've got a disadvantage. So. You might not win a regatta because you're going to get... If I foil in 8 knots and Scott foils in 7 knots, it doesn't sound like a lot. But if there's 7 knots for 1 minute of the race, he's 1 minute in front. So that's how a little bit can turn into a lot in a light race. But you've got to accept that you can't win them all, but you win a few races, it feels good.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
No worries.